Okay. We'll call the Community Development Committee meeting to order for Monday, February 24th. Roll call here, Rick Bagerly.
Sean Meskey.
Kathy Schwantes.
Sarah Sundberg.
Brian Grammons.
Dave Ramstedt.
Vicki Davis.
All right, and West Central Tribune is here too. So. Public comment, no one is here to speak to us. Item number three, the Renaissance Zone update. Right. So I looked this morning, nothing was on the internet or the website. So then it came, I was on the road all day.
Right.
So was there a reason why it didn't get on?
The agenda?
Yeah.
Yep, I just forgot to hand it off.
Okay.
But we got it on this first thing that came in this morning.
Okay. So, Dave, are you talking about it, or Brian, or Sarah, or all three of you? Who's going first?
Well, we've got the updated map here, so I'll pass that around. And then we have translated the package into applications.
Experienced.
Oh, you do?
Okay.
Oh, at the Planning Commission meeting?
Yep. Projection.
And then I will give you a copy of the slides of the presentation that we've been giving. We gave it to the presentation to the SBA and an aide to Colin Peterson. And we just gave a presentation to the Vision 2040 Task Force this afternoon. And it's been a pretty effective tool. It just summarizes the Opportunity Zone, the reason for the Renaissance Zone, which we've discussed before, and the specific incentives that are part of the Renaissance Zone. The packet that you have in the manila folder is the nine incentives which you've read about in the summaries, and these literally are a translation of those summaries into application form. The only two that you have not seen is the TIF application, which actually we have a TIF application. I just reformatted it into so it matches the other applications. And the Downtown Hotel Conference Center, which is still kind of conjecture at this point, because we're still in the process of discovery and trying to determine what's feasible and what isn't and what's allowed and what can't, you know, especially with the lease with the hospital. But I just found out today from Steve Okins that there was some prior plan for a building with a ramp and the Bremer Bank, and so I want to dig that up too and learn about that a little bit before we pursue this last one-off incentive for a hotel, boutique hotel. But the idea with the hotel is that it'd be like a boutique hotel, 20 to maybe 50 units, a little higher end but inexpensive, that would be connected by Skyway to the hospital and provide a small conference area and places to stay in the downtown, which since the last hotel closed, I don't know how many years ago, downtown has been absent of a hotel. So that's the idea behind that. I'm planning on sending all of these to the city attorney, Robert Scott, tomorrow. And they really need a pass to fill in some details and to bring a little more reality to them. They are still very draft. In a draft state, so I'm hoping there's a lot of stuff to cover up tonight, but I'm hoping that the committee can take a look at these and offer any suggestions or objections or anything at all over the next week or so while Robert is taking a look at these things, and we can get some maybe some real detailed and pointed critiques of these things.
So you haven't had any calls from a developer for a hotel?
No, this is a desired thing that I'm proposing. And again, we don't have to have that particular incentive. It's just an idea, so. On being contacted by developers, however, the Renaissance Zone was written up in the paper, we have had a number of calls, which we have fielded to Eric Bachman at the EDC. And obviously the SBA contacted us, and so did Colin Peterson's office, and some developers from Carver County. So there has been a lot of interest in the Renaissance Zone. The nice thing about the Renaissance Zone, well, initially it just started out as we were going to try to come up with a package of local incentives that would enhance it. And then that kind of fed into Sarah's idea of doing an overlay and attaching all these incentives to that. And then that kind of led to, after we did some searching around the state, you know, and we discovered Moorhead was copying, well, at least partially copying, North Dakota's Renaissance Zone, we thought, oh, there we go. We'll call it the Renaissance Zone. And they've had some great success with their incentive package, but they don't do it nearly as much. They just do a couple of things. And I've been sending them these things because they're interested in doing more with their Renaissance Zone. But so it's been kind of an evolving process here. But Vision 2040, the Housing Task Force, they actually voted today to officially back the idea. They seem very excited about the potential to develop housing.
Which Vision 2040 task force is that?
Housing task force. That's
the housing subcommittee.
Linda Mathiason. So you know, one of the arguments is that, you know, we've been struggling to hit 20,000 for a very, very long time, and we're simply not going to ever get there if we don't build housing. They can't move here if there's nowhere to move into. So, and the only real way to do that is either to expand our borders and build new developments, or to build higher density housing within the boundaries we have. That's our two options. So, and frankly, the existing housing developments are not keeping pace with demand. There's far more demand than the housing they're building. Vacancy rates are extremely low. They're around 2%. Demand, these projects are being pre-leased way ahead of their completion, which just tells you that we just aren't having the development that we should be taking advantage of in order to expand population. Minneapolis, St. Paul saw their first population increases in over half a century, and it's because they've changed their zoning to higher density, and they're building apartment buildings all over the place because they can't expand. They're locked in by all the surrounding cities. So their only choice is to increase density. And it's been not only a boon to them for population, it's also been a boon for neighborhood revitalization. They've unpopularly been able to inject more middle and upper income families into the mix, so that it's more of a diverse income level, or diverse incomes of households. So it's been a big success story for them. I was personally involved in the renovation of the Sears.
In St. Paul?
And actually on Lake Street, the big Sears headquarters on Lake, and I think it's Lake and Lindale. But anyway, I've been involved in a lot of the housing down there, probably about $4 billion worth, and it's just been gangbusters, and I think we could take advantage of that. I think there's a lot of developers in the metro area that are seeing, you know, a leveling. There are some concessions now in some of the projects, especially at lease up now, to get the tenants, and you weren't seeing that a few years ago. So they are looking elsewhere, and I think that's probably why we're getting some of the phone calls. So that's kind of where we're at. I'm sorry, did I do what Aaron did? Take all my thunder?
No,
take
Aaron,
all your thunder?
You're oh, okay. Good.
Aaron took all my thunder earlier today.
So I know we've been trying to get over 20,000 for a few years now.
Right.
Have you checked with USDA? Because once we hit over 20, they don't get loans.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh.
And that's the majority of the loans here in Wilmer. They do them instead of FHA.
Interesting. So you think it's an argument to stay under 20?
Well, I don't know.
Okay, I can check into that.
You know, when we had a retreat one year, I said, well, we'll be at 40,000 by 2040. And Litchfield Avenue, all those houses would be gone, and it'd be commercial, and we'd have heated sidewalks, even if they shovel. I was just dreaming, but that's the issue, going over 20,000 for housing for rural development loans. And that's what most people get out here in the working class. So it's a catch 22.
Okay. Well, we don't have to do any housing. We could keep it so we don't do any housing and keep the population down, but it's up to you.
I think the Minnesota State Demographer's Office has already estimated that we're over. So it'll be interesting to see what the census comes out with.
But not official.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the last number I saw, we were over.
Yeah. Not by much, but we were over.
Yep.
So how did this go at the Planning Commission? I saw some of the remarks. They wanted maybe help with some roofing on buildings instead of the facade.
Right. So I responded to those, and I said that's more like the abatement would cover that sort of stuff. The facade is such a small number that, $10,000, you can spend that on a couple of beams. It's not really, it would have to be a much greater incentive than what it is. But the abatement, and besides that, when you do structure, typically you're opening walls up, ceilings. So it's usually part and parcel to a renovation project. And so that makes sense for the abatement, so that you're actually getting a tax exemption on the increased value that you're putting into it.
John?
Thank you for your presentation. Are there more parts to be presented, or?
It's more of a handoff. Yeah, it's more of a handoff of stuff.
Then I like a lot of the ideas, but I think will be helpful. And don't take that but as I disregard everything I said beforehand, okay? It may not be very clear about what the end result is, other than revitalization. But I think it could become clear if how do you envision these applications being scored? Because I'm assuming it's not going to be completely arbitrary. I would assume that you might want to, so it's not completely subjective, that you might want to have some kind of an evaluation of this. And if you have that evaluation, that would tell me what you want to see down there. And it would tell an applicant of what truly you want to see down here. As you know, TIF districts and tax abatements have been controversial, and we don't always have everybody on the same page for those. And I think a lot of that is because there's no clear vision of where those projects are going to go. It's more of development for that particular business's development sake. I would love to see more of a comprehensive understanding of what we choose and want to develop and what we want to see downtown look like. Because as I look through there going, if you're going to end up circling a lot of these, if it doesn't conform, like this downtown hotel conference center idea, first time I've seen it, if that's something that we, staff, council, the city thinks is great, I say, if you're going to do this, there's higher points for that. I know somebody just brought up fixing a roof. Those are very vital concerns. Mm-hmm. However, does that get the same kind of a point system as if you're going to come in and do something else?
That's true. You're absolutely right. And, with all of these things, we need to have, we need to bring in this other level of detail to how they get chosen, how they get evaluated, how you score them, as you say. You're absolutely right. And that's the next kind of pass at this to.
Right. Because I know that's going to be the discussion eventually when we have to make the decision whether or not to do this is. Because I hear it already a little bit of, we're just going to throw more money at some projects, and this is an inequitable thing. I'm like, well, you understand, and this one, which is very appealing, is if you're an existing business downtown, there are incentives that you could apply for as well. It's not just bringing a new business for the sake of bringing a new business. It's broader than that, but I'm at the point, because I'm sold on doing the concept, of making that net a little bit finer, so I know what's going to be able to be caught in there and what we might let go. Okay. And so I'm at the point where I would love to see some, I don't know if it's going to be a rubric or what it is. I don't want it to be a completely subjective process. It doesn't have to be entirely objective either, but when you have some objective delineations laid out in an evaluation process, I know where we're going, and I can support that 100%. So.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
I think part of coming here tonight, too, we wanted to update on some of the vetting process and how that's been going. And I think it's pretty easy to say that it's been going very well. So in addition to meeting with Planning Commission and Vision 2040, we also, Main Street held a downtown property owner. It was open. There was plenty more than just property owners downtown there, meeting to go over the same incentives and to talk about the goals of, you know, wanting to make this attractive and approachable and attainable for current existing business and property owners and maybe those looking to expand or anything like that. And so we had over 30 people in attendance at that meeting, which was really great to see. We held that at Spurs, and so we got some really good feedback from that meeting as well to make that connection.
Yeah. It was a good meeting. I went to it.
Yeah. Is the Planning Commission, I didn't read those comments, I apologize for that. Are they beginning to try to find a shared vision of what this could look like, or are we still in the infancy of?
No, I think we got the impression that they're on board.
Yeah, they're on board as well. The next step is really to take this and have Robert kind of look through it and start putting some words on an ordinance piece of paper.
Right, and we feel confident to take these next steps, as you mentioned, to actually start flushing out, you know, how does this mechanically kind of work. For going through the committees, commission, council, yeah. And what's the evaluation form? How does that get communicated to both the applicants and, you know, to our teams?
You wouldn't want somebody just says, "I'm applying for this, and therefore I should get this."
Right.
Well, no, I mean it has to mesh with all the things we're doing. Or if you're doing it, and you know you're applying for five of these layers, we really see value in three of those that align with where we want to see a downtown vision. So I'm thinking that way it's going to make it consistent and fair for all applicants. And so,
right.
Again, I'm an endorsement of the idea. I'm already pursuing that next level.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think I think most of them have the caveat that they can be declined for whatever reason.
Yep.
So if someone does come in and they got a project, they could qualify for 2, 3, 4,
yep.
All of them at once?
Sure. Okay. That's the idea.
Kelly?
That actually, as I look at all these forms and all the paperwork that needs to be done, if they want to apply for more than one, a lot of it's repeated information.
Exactly.
Not all the same. Is there any way to condense
Yep, that's another thing we want to take a look at. Now we've done this, is we want to think about consolidating. So maybe there's a master application somehow, or maybe this thing gets put online in a way where, you know what I mean? Yeah. So like a lot of these things are one part, and then, you know, so.
So since we're kind of taking Fargo and Moorhead's idea, what do they do?
Well, North Dakota, it's actually North Dakota. They've had a Renaissance zone for, I don't know, 30 years. It's all tax abatements. That's all it is.
Oh.
Yeah, they're just juggling like one or two of these pieces versus nine of them.
Right. You know, they have a new home incentive that kind of is the Renaissance. It's the single family perk that, since they're doing this Renaissance zone, they also did a single family thing where if you build a new home, you get 3 years of tax exemption. That's another thing in North Dakota they do.
So have they articulated sort of what they're looking for for the top criteria. Obviously, single-family homes must be one of those things. But in their abatement projects, do they have they identified?
No. No, it's just a zone. And okay. And if it's if it meets the criteria, you can get the exemptions. Yep. Mm-hmm. And I think Moorhead literally took the same criteria so that the contractors would recognize it.
Sides of the river.
Yeah, and we essentially took that and tweaked it a little bit, but it's basically a 5, 10, and 15-year abatement based on the dollars per square foot you invest. So, and it's higher for new construction and lower for renovation for obvious reasons.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I mean, you can make this as complex and regimented as you want to. On the other end of the scale is the, we have 50,000, 5,000 per project, first 10 people get there. It is what it is. And if that all happens in January, you wait until the following January 1 when you get another $50,000 available and the first 10 get there. I mean, so you know, I've seen this with small city block grant where you mm-hmm. say, we're going to do facades and we're going to do apartment refurbishing. And all the people that wanted facade renovation, they came screaming in. The people with the apartments found out, well, they got lead abatement, they got all kinds of other things that they got to deal with, and then it became cost prohibitive. So it just depends on how complex you want it. Do you give one that says, I'm going to put in $100,000 worth of investment? Do you give that a priority over the guy who's just saying, I'm getting $5,000 and I'm going to match that with five and have a $10,000 project? Is the size of the project, you know, one of those criteria? I don't know. It could make a tremendous amount of difference for that one facade business as compared to the other guys going, well, I got 95% of the money. I just thought I'd, you know, mm-hmm. grab another five here. You know, so it's kind of interesting, but it's something that you'll have to decide.
And for me, it's not necessarily the dollars that are there. It is the intent of those dollars and what they're going to be used for. I'm all for first come, first serve if all of those projects conform to a vision that we have. Yep. You know, there's certain facades that you may say, well, at least it's occupying another storefront downtown, but perhaps it's not conforming to what the community wants to see. Maybe it's a bad example, but so I'm not hung up about the money. If one project comes in and it meets all the criteria and it is, well, then there you go. I guess we're using the money that way. I'm okay with that. So I get that for the expenditures. I'm just wanting to make sure that we're not just putting money into projects for the sake of doing it, as long as we have a clear indicator of vision of where we want to go. Maybe I'm being redundant, but that's...
Right. And I would just add, like, if you were saying we're shooting for a historical mm-hmm. hook, then you put it out there.
Right.
You know, I know of a community that said your front awnings have to be striped because that's the way they were in 1887. Okay? So we want to go back to that. So the person that wanted to have a solid awning, solid color, or they wanted it to have a modern color as compared to what would have been in the 1800s, they can still do their project. They just don't get the money because that's not the vision that the program was promoting. Mm-hmm. So, yep, totally understand.
Yep.
Now, we have the only ceiling we have right now is on the storefront incentive. We're intending to do 5, 10,000. But we don't have a ceiling on the abatements or anything else. So if that's something that any of you think should be done, you know, let us know. The abatement right now is just the city share of the tax. I haven't gotten a warm feeling from the county or school board on whether they would like to participate in the abatement. So I'm assuming as of right now that they don't. Hopefully. Hopefully they will, but you know, as of right now, we're moving forward as if they're not. But that is a 5, 10, 15 year thing based on the investments you'll see in the packet. But, you know, we could limit those to 10 a year or something, you know, which is right now there's virtually nothing going on except for at the hospital. So, you know, 96% of the 94% of the permits are outside the zone.
So do you have a list of all the city properties that may be available?
Yep, we have not created the map yet, but yep, we have that. And we will have a map that says these are the city properties that are available, and we'll have the criteria for getting those properties will be defined.
Mm-hmm. There's not too many. Most of what we own downtown is in the form of parking lots, so it's really important. And what's going to be one of those visions or those, yeah, you know, boxes that are going to have to be checked with that is there's going to have to be a parking solution, whether it's a parking ramp or whatever that solution might be. There will definitely be some significant
retail,
caveats
housing,
that,
yeah,
that come with
it's
that
be a
sort
significant
of an incentive.
Project.
Yeah. Any other questions? Vicky, Kathy?
Me. Yeah, this is really nice. I like how you have it all so easy.
Really
bad.
Go ahead.
When you said Vicky or Kathy, I don't know.
Oh, Sean.
I talked enough. But when it comes to abatements, and we've had, in my time on the council, the 4 years, every time we've dealt with them, they've all been very different. And I've desperately tried to find some kind of a thing to give more of a objective look at that again. Because otherwise, they seem very subjective at times. I think here's an opportunity to do that. Because I don't mind. I think an abatement or a TIF district is a tool in the toolbox. And if you have the tool, you have it there to use it at the appropriate time. I don't know if we've ever really articulated what the appropriate time is to use them. We just, oh, today somebody's asked for it and they qualify, and we go with it. I would love to see, and this is the opportunity right here, of we're going to give priority to, for instance, maybe housing abatements or something that puts it a criteria. It will make it... It is just for me. I'm only speaking for myself. It may make it easier when you're sitting at a council table to say, you know what, they do qualify for the state rules, but they also conform to exactly the vision of what we had in mind with this Renaissance district. That would be helpful. Because
that is in there. Yeah. We have a 10-unit minimum if it's housing only.
Yep.
If it's mixed use, we have a 4-unit minimum of housing. We have not specified where these projects should happen because we have wanted to encourage creativity and encourage people to bring the ideas in, and we would prefer that we do something unique here where it's an open zone where all ideas are welcome and will be evaluated in some fashion yet to be determined, which I love that the committee is on really on the cusp of let's figure out how to get this thing to work. But
I think that's neat, because then if something comes on board and it's really cool,
right,
then you can encourage.
And we can't think
that,
of everything.
Yeah, right. And then you can encourage more of those applications to come in for projects like
that. Now, that said, I think the developments that are first going to come in are going to be along the corridors, Highway 12, First, downtown. I don't think they're going to happen on the other side of First in the the residential area. They could, but I don't think that's where they're actually going to come in anyway. I think it's going to be pretty predictable. And it's probably going to happen where we'd like them to happen. So
for TIF and tax abatement, could they actually be more stringent than the regular city policy for those?
Yep. Yeah, this is an opportunity to kind of take that policy that we already have and say, this is just like we've been talking about tonight, right? This is our goal, this is our vision. And so we want, in order to obtain this incentive for this zone, here are the check boxes that have to be met for a project in this area.
So then again, talking just TIF and tax abatement, it could actually be an incentive for someone to build outside the zone.
Well, TIF and abatements, yes. Yeah. The only place that the abatement is scaled, formally scaled, is in the zone right now. But we could make that a citywide thing if the council wanted to. Because abatements are available anywhere.
Right.
But we...
That's my concern. I'm probably the most pro-economic development council member you've got. So
right.
We could limit them. I like the idea I wouldn't want us to limit it.
I see what you're saying. Okay. Yeah, so we could take that one and actually make it citywide. And maybe change the criteria, you know, make it one criteria for the abatements in the zone and another criteria outside the zone, something like that.
That's so, what you're saying, though, is you would rather see the one that exists right now just be what we keep,
okay.
I think, is...
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm just saying you could if you want to.
I mean, bottom line is we can see the impact of adding to the tax base. I mean, look at what has happened with the development that has been here in the last couple of years. Why would we want to prohibit people from disincentivize them from moving forward and doing the projects? We're not loosening anything on the property taxes.
No.
Right?
No.
We're adding to our tax base, and we don't realize it today, but we will realize it down the road. And that's significant, so I would be concerned that we not penalize anyone.
I like that idea, too.
So I like our policy. I think it's worked for many years.
Yep.
It's not overly abused. You still have the dollars investment and the job investment to offset it to qualify.
Mm-hmm. I think that's great. We were hoping that once this took off and became successful, we might replicate it in the industrial park. We might expand the industrial park zone to include our new annexation, maybe. But so, you know, I agree 100%. The more we can do, the better. So
I think one important thing to remember too about the Renaissance zone. And we, in some ways, we've used the word, like, restrict what TIF and tax abatement might be used for. But one thing we're also trying to do is, like we've mentioned too, is encouraging creativity, encouraging context. And I think for developers, sometimes it can be helpful for us to say, you know, our goal is 500 dwelling units in 5 years. And that brings that flag up for all of those developers, so they know, okay, this is what we're looking for, right? And we want to be a part of that solution in that Renaissance zone. And I think a lot of what the Opportunity Zone work and the kind of the idea behind some of that work has been, you know, we want to target these low-income census tracts and see projects and support businesses that are going to support the community in that way. And so I think by us setting that vision, it might help a developer think outside of the box and say, oh, maybe I could tweak how I normally do a project to include this additional piece that they're looking for while still getting that cash flow that I'm looking for with that particular incentive too.
Yeah.
That's exactly, because that, I know traditionally we had said, oh, in Willmar we don't really ever apply tax abatements to housing projects. We always said those were TIF projects, but we didn't, because we saw housing was an issue. And so we have been, and I can live with those decisions of saying we're putting those dollars to building housing developments, because we've been doing that.
Yep.
But we're still not keeping up. And so that, when you declare that's what it is, then I'd say I'm very supportive of rolling those in, because that is conforming to a idea. So I wouldn't say, you know, Kathy and I may sound like we're on opposite ends, or one's more pro-business, or not. That's not actually the case. It's a matter of, if it's targeted, I'd say then do it. You just don't. There's a perception that sometimes tax abatements are just thrown at projects for the sake of doing it, and it's maybe very arbitrary. Which it's not. We do our homework on it, but if for some people it feels that way, but if it's clear that we have a vision, boom. It makes sense to fund as many of those projects that people are willing to put that money into those projects. So,
yeah, and that was our original intent, to focus all of this incentives into this one area, which is the poorest census tract of Wilmer, which used to be the wealthiest section of Wilmer. Now, what's surprising is that Aaron Bachman, the interest in our package is actually the little incentives. It's not the big ones. It's the free permits, the free sack and whack, you know, the sewer access charges and water access charges.
That's interesting.
They love those. And, you know, I think when you talk multifamily housing, actually the sack and whack is an extremely sizable incentive because they charge on the fixture. So that one incentive, sack and whack, is actually very surgically, even though anybody can get it, it is really intended for multifamily to entice them to build.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think putting this package into motion as well just shows that as a city, we have that mentality. We want to support the businesses that want to build here or want to expand or who have been here for decades. And I think that this, the Renaissance Zone specifically, makes that far more attractive and far more attainable for those as well, which is exciting.
So can we get a list of current tax increment zones and abatements and how many years are left?
Sure. Yeah, there's not that, we don't have that many. But no, yes, I can email to you.
Some of them should be for Steve anyway.
Yeah.
Almost up, aren't they?
Some of them are.
So yeah. Remember the campus out there, how many years left on their second one? So that'd be good.
Yeah, so that's how we're at. We're kind of at this point where we really need to figure out how this stuff actually works, how we want to create how we want to create the application process, get rid of the duplication. It's just best to be put online, so you've got one kind of general information form, and then you click and you go to the, and you kind of take this, what's that called when you... when you go through a serial sequence.
Cascading?
Yes, a cascading type of a form. So.
Isn't that what you were supposed to say? Is it going to be online?
It's going to be. I don't want to add any more moisture to this cascade.
And then we also need a really careful review by Robert Scott to look at, make this thing real. So
this is just information.
Yep. And I know it's a lot of reading and stuff, but we could really use it. So.
Just one really minor thing is to use the same name. Sometimes it's Wilmer Renaissance Zone.
Right.
It's Renaissance Zone.
Right. Yep. So we need to clean up our branding and, you know, the whole ball of wax. So.
Keep the name Renaissance?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Yeah, I love that.
You want to have an original name?
What the heck? I like it. I think it fits the area. I think it sets itself apart from the Opportunity Zone. One of the key takeaways we offered to the SBA, the aid of Colin Peterson, was that, you know, instead of them picking and approving these zones like they've been doing, for these place-based incentives, they could actually create the place-based incentive as and adopt the incentives to it, but draft a boilerplate ordinance that local jurisdictions can adopt and pick the zone themselves. And then you could have local, you could have city, county, state, federal, maybe even agencies, all with these layers, and a jurisdiction could adopt one or 10 of them, and then they could concentrate them if they want to, or they could spread them out. And a lot of times these initiatives focus on a social issue, or they'll focus on an economic issue, or they'll focus on some service thing or infrastructure, you know, whatever it is. And you could literally take, which is kind of a neat diagram in here, you could literally take take all of these incentives, and they would just be layers on your on your area. So they seem to like that. Would give a lot more power to, or provide a lot more impact to the area that you're trying to transform or send to a new trajectory. But it would also broaden the scope of who and what organizations could take advantage of the incentives. I mean, suddenly you've got a broad spectrum of nonprofits to individual homeowners to businesses. I mean, you know, if you start with all these layers, they're all kind of targeting different needs and groups that would you know do the thing. That was a key thing.
So federal government is on board with this.
Federal government is just the opportunity zone. So okay. Ours is a totally separate.
The state's not involved?
The state's either. Not involved. No. Okay. Although they came, the SBDC, they came. They were really interested in this, too. So I said, hopefully you guys can throw us an incentive. So I did some shameless pandering while they're here. But yeah, no, this is a totally separate thing for us.
Anything else? Take it for information, then.
Thank you.
It'll come back in a couple of weeks. Or month,
yeah, or? It's tentatively a couple of weeks. I gotta see how Robert is going to look this stuff over, what time he has available. Also, a lot of these things we talked about are things that are really going to have to take some time and concentration. So they're kind of fussy. So I don't know. But yeah, I'll probably come back in a couple of weeks at least for update.
Yeah. You're shooting for like May?
We're shooting for April. I mean, but I don't know if it's really going to happen. I'm hoping.
I'll get it all finalized by May then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully.
That's pretty fast.
Still construction season.
Yep. Right. Yeah, we'd love to have our first batch of storefront incentives this spring. You know.
Nice.
I mean, that was another thing for look at Main Street. They're excited about the storefront incentive. It's mm-hmm. the little ones that people really like.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which has been a success down in New Orleans.
Yeah, yeah.
The visual stuff. Mm-hmm. Nobody gets really excited about somebody replacing a furnace.
Right.
At least one person, yes.
Right.
Does anyone know how that's going? And most of the people replaced them yet? Or?
Oh, district heat?
Yeah. What, July 1st?
Well, there's still...
There are a few
there's still quite a few customers on it, but the bigger ones have all come off. Except
I'm glad you brought that up, though.
Except the city.
We were very pleased. John Heron, he's actually on board with this, too. He's very, and Marty, they've been very helpful, and they actually brought...
They presented at the last commission meeting. I was going to say they did your presentation light to the commission, and the commission was also very receptive. However, they're like, "What's the next steps?" And it's like, "Well, it hasn't even been approved by the council." And they're like, "Well, are we getting too far ahead?" I said, "No, I think you're right where you need to be, because if it's all formed together, that's how it will work." So.
Okay, I didn't realize you said on that too. Okay.
Yeah, so they were going to have hopefully some feedback. They didn't have a lot of discussion there, but they had some questions, and they have a committee that will deal with it specifically. So you might get some questions from them.
Yep, and so that's been awesome. And we managed to kind of, you know, hammer out how to phase in the decommissioning of it, but still kind of have it as an available, the WMU plant. As an available property developers might come and court them with ideas and maybe purchase desires and whatever. So, and they even expressed an interest in maybe even doing a land swap at some point in the future with in the industrial park. And so, a lot of good communication.
They talked about that as well.
Oh, good.
Yep, they did. So it sounds like just all the stuff you talked about, they definitely relate it through the process. So.
Yeah, it was great, just kind of ideation kind of stuff, and so, you know, very casual. So
one other thing then, since we're talking about MUC, how about the street lights downtown, Main Street? They talked with you on?
Yep, we pushed it off because of how big the public works agenda was. When would they have met? Mm-hmm. Last week, the week before? We just pushed it off one public works. So everything should be coming through for final approvals with that. They have purchased and they have in stock 4 test lights. We want to put them out. We're planning for the south end of 4th Street between Litchfield and Becker, kind of right there by Foxhole and Barn Theater, where we get quite a bit of traffic in that area, to do kind of just a smaller version of the replacement to see what the style looks like, what the lighting looks like. We're talking about some different things that have to happen with Quick Trip and different things in that area too, so they themselves are wanting to get it out there to see some of that. But they've rewritten the agreement that needs to be passed through council, and then that formal schedule of how we're actually going to fit everything in. But it will probably start in 2021, so we'll put it through the CIP.
So that'll go to Public Works next week?
Huh? Yeah. Yep, that's the plan, and then to City Council.
And Quick Trip, are they planning?
Mm-hmm. Yep, we have plans on desks that are being reviewed and working through a couple of hookups, but I think we've found solutions, so they intend to start building this year. All
right, so they won't be part of this renaissance?
No, they're
they do good their to own go. Thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Any other updates on any other projects?
That's kind of the big one right now.
Tom is just starting to ramp up on plan review, so I think he's just received 3 or 4,
mm-hmm.
which I listed on the update, which I'll certainly be getting soon. But nothing really big yet. So
anything else from any council person?
No, good job on all this. It's a lot of work.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Thank you.
Thank you.